Hey, welcome to Garden Fork Radio. Thanks for downloading the show. My name is Eric. I'm your host. I have a YouTube channel and this podcast where me and my friends talk about kind of eclectic DIY maker how-to stuff. Today, I have one of my best friends, Brian, here, and we're going to talk about flying drones as a backyard hobby, all the way up to flying drones as a professional videographer, which my friend Brian is. So welcome, sir.
Hello, how's it going? Thanks for having me.
So full disclosure on Brian and I have known each other almost as long as I've been married, I think.
Yes. Does that mean that we're married? I'm confused. Okay.
Brian and I both started out working in video together, and we worked for a very crazy production company, which we don't need to go into, but we became fast friends, and we've stuck together since then. We live within 20 blocks of each other in New York City. We help each other with video projects, and we also work together on home improvement projects. I'm indebted to Brian for helping me finish when we bought our building, helping to finish it because I was in a meltdown and Brian stepped in and saved me.
I don't even remember that you were in a meltdown.
We were getting the rental apartment upstairs ready, and
I remember that.
Yeah. I melted into the floor and you stepped in.
Okay. That's important to have friends for sure.
Yeah. So, you know, your friends may drive you up the wall every once in a while, which is my job. But they are handy when you really need help. So, and you've never been on the podcast. We talk all the time. You've never been on the show.
I can tell you've never
been on the show.
Yeah. Oh, okay. I've never been on the podcast. Okay. But I've been in your YouTube videos and my dad's been in your YouTube videos. Maybe my daughter's been in your YouTube videos.
It's a big family. So I think people are probably listening because they want to learn about flying drones and that kind of thing. And I have a drone and you have a drone. And how did you start getting into it?
So I work professionally for television, for corporate video, this type of thing. And I work very often for a public TV station out of Germany, one of the biggest news organizations in Europe for TV. I work for their New York office and their DC office. And the bureau chief 4 years ago now asked me, he said he was planning a trip to Canada, to a really cold part of Canada called Fermont, Canada. And he wanted to take me as the camera person, but we needed to do drone work. Would I learn how to fly drones? And I said, sure, why not? Because I'm always up for a challenge, and it's great to learn new things. And it was something I honestly was a little intimidated to learn to do. So we bought a drone, and I took it out. And there's a few places in Brooklyn where you can fly legally. And took it out and was very hesitant, thinking it was going to crash immediately. I'm still a little nervous sometimes. It's kind of a bit of magic how they work. You know, what I learned is they're incredible, and they're really basic operation of a drone. But the ones that are using GPS, which are all the sort of prosumer ones, and up. They can, you know, they don't fly themselves, but once you get the basic controls, which probably teenagers that play video games are probably even better at it, it's fairly easy because they're using GPS in order to constantly adjust against wind and other elements that might move it around.
I remember you and I, we both had gotten drones, and at that point, a simple drone was over $1,000. And now it's quite a bit less, but we were figuring out where was legal in New York City. And we'll touch on the legalities a little later in the show, but New York City is basically locked down as far as drones, you know, after 9/11, of course. And we went to a city park in Staten Island that was down this deserted dirt road. And it was a field, a runway field for a radio controlled airplane club in this beat up city park, but it was one of the few legal places that we could practice flying the drones. And that's where I had the aha moment, where I put my father-in-law had given me a drone as a present, and I put it up in the air and we could see the video, and I was like, holy cow. And you were a little more advanced at that point, but it was just kind of an aha moment there. Did you have that?
They're amazing because you get, you know, this perspective that you couldn't get any other way. I mean, in the past, before drones, having a view from above like that would cost hundreds of dollars per hour, if not more, to hire a pilot or a helicopter. It's amazing what you can do for the price that you can pay. I mean, there's also a place in Brooklyn that I go to fly drones, which is basically a radar. It's grandfathered in. It's an old place for radar control airplanes. That's legal. And it's actually not that far from JFK Airport, but it's, I guess, far enough. That's legal.
So do you remember the name of the park where you're going now? Because I haven't been to that one.
Yeah. Well, it's maybe a 20-minute drive from me. It's called Culvert Vaux Park, and it has basically a grandfathered place where people would go there for their radar control airplanes. So because of that, it's illegal to fly in that immediate area. So it's right on the water. It's visual. It's beautiful. It's you can see the rides from Coney Island from there, and a lot of people go there to fly. It's a great, for me, it's like a great home base testing area. But I've also found areas in Brooklyn that are industrial and low key and outside of airspace that is controlled airspace from the local airports that I can also fly in. And that's when you get into sort of this gray area of what's legal and what's illegal in New York City.
Hey, a quick aside here. Please shop as local as you can, as much as you can. If you're going to shop online and going to use Amazon, would you consider using our Amazon store as your starting point for all your shopping? If you do, we get a little finder's fee, and that all adds up and help us pay the bills here. It's amazon.com/shop/gardenfork. That's amazon.com/shop/gardenfork. The link will be in the show notes as well. Thank you. So I'm curious about your first trip with the drone. So you're this known videographer, director of photography in New York City. One of your big clients calls you and says, we want to go to the Arctic. Will you learn how to fly a drone to do high definition video? And you said yes. So what's it like lugging all that gear and then trying to have that gear function in Arctic temperatures?
Okay. So the first trip that I went, it wasn't the Arctic, but it was a place we went in the winter to a place called Fermont, Canada, which incredibly cold. Yeah, it's incredibly cold. It's a mining village built for iron ore extraction, and it's an incredible place that most people spend most of their time inside. But we went there to make a documentary for German TV about this town, and I didn't quite know how this drone would function in this extreme cold, but I was willing to try, and It turns out, of course, there's no rain because the only thing that comes down is snow, and the drone functioned fine in very thin snow. I must say the very first flight that I did, I didn't have the wisdom to have a landing pad because you don't want a drone to land on the ground because pebbles and grass or dirt could kick up and scratch the camera or damage it, the blade. So you really want a landing pad. So I tried to land and take off from a Pelican box. So of course, on the very first time I was first flight, I broke a propeller because that's a really silly idea.
Pelican box is one of those heavy duty black waterproof camera boxes,
right? And so my boss immediately thought I broke the drone on the very first flight. Thank goodness it wasn't. I was able to I had extra propellers, and then basically I started doing all kinds of flights that were really safe. So the safest kind of thing you can do in terms of photography with a drone video is the reveal. So you make sure you have something in front of you. And I remember one of the first shots was this huge dam that generates electricity, hydroelectric dam. And there were trees between us and the dam. The drone would take off looking at the trees. And then as it got higher, it revealed this massive dam.
That was a great shot. I saw that.
Thank you. It's really easy to do because the drone doesn't have to go anywhere but up, and then you take it right back down. So it's safe. It's all I wanted to do with shots like that to stay really safe. And they work really well. But of course, you know, eventually you have to get pushed into being a little bit more daring. And this drone was able to function in really like, you know, sub-freezing temperatures with a little bit of snow. It still functioned beautifully once I realized not to take off from the top of a plastic box and try to land there.
I broke a propeller on my first try, and the propellers are relatively inexpensive. I mean, I'm sure you have spares in your bag as well, but I have a couple spares.
Yeah. Especially if you're going to go to some remote area, you need to carry quite a few spares just so you can sleep at night. The hardest thing for me for these kinds of cold climates, and I've been to, I don't know, maybe four or five very cold climates for this work. The hardest thing is operating with my fingers, because I can't use mittens while I operate very effectively. I need to often be able to press buttons on my iPad, which is what I use for the control panel. Mm-hmm. And it's this constant battle of how long I can, you know, some kind of configuration so my fingers don't freeze while I'm able to operate the drone. And that was a huge challenge for some of these jobs. I mean, in terms of just actually operating it.
I just, the shots you got were phenomenal of just kind of this, they looked like cinematic, like something out of Star Wars, out of this otherworldly open pit mine thing, you know, like you were on some planet in the nebula and, you know, the bad guys were in the iron ore mine or something, but it looked amazing. I mean, I could, having grown up in Wisconsin, which isn't the Arctic, but I know how cold it can get. And it's really cold there right now, according to Will, our co-host. But that was kind of amazing. Did the batteries ever freeze up? I mean, did they not work as well because it was cold?
They didn't have a problem. I tried to keep the batteries. Well, I kept the batteries in the car that was running and heated, so I'd only pull them out, put them on the drone when I needed them. But they didn't go down really quick the way some batteries will in a cold climate. They actually lasted quite a bit. But I mean, I have to say, it wasn't that I was running the drone hours at a time. I mean, it would usually be 10 or maybe 15 minutes, which would be about the length of one battery. And at this time, this is a few years ago, I was using the DJI Mavic Pro, which is a great tool for sort of travel documentary work because it collapses into a little box. It's not that much gear to schlep around.
Do you lie awake at night wondering, what is Eric up to now? You do, don't you? I have the solution for this. You can get those answers for $5 a month. That's what we're asking if you'd like to become a contributing regular supporter of Garden Fork through our Patreon program, is it called? I don't know. We use this site called Patreon. It makes it really easy for you and really easy for me. I wouldn't say every day, but a lot during the week, I post pictures and just thoughts and audio musings and stuff. The last kind of audio talk was, I thought, too much information, but I shared it anyway. And so that's what you get if you want to wonder what I'm just rambling, aren't I? Anyway, just asking you if you want to support the show. I'm asking for $5 a month. You get the episodes. You also get photos that I don't really like. I'm not really big on sharing everything with Facebook and Instagram, but the core group of supporters who know who they are, they're almost all podcast listeners, actually. Anyway, so I share that with you when you become a patron. It's really simple to sign up. Patreon has an app that you can put on your phone or your iPad. And every time I post something, you will get an email notification. And also, if you have notifications turned on for the Patreon app, you get a little bing. And, oh, Erica's posted a photo, or Erica's posted an audio clip. And you also get the after show of Garden Fork Radio. So that's me and my friends after we're done doing the half hour of For Everyone. We do like 5 or 10 minutes of, I just call it the after show. Sometimes it's something we forgot to bring up in the show. And I think it's interesting. The patrons that have told me said that they like it too. So think about that. If you want to sign up, the information is in the show notes here. You can also go to patreon.com/gardenfork. That's patreon.com/gardenfork, or links in the show notes here. All right, back to the show. So you come back from the Arctic, you start getting other people wanting to hire you for drone cinematography, and then you are already aware, we were both aware, that you just can't put a drone up in New York City. So you tried to get me to sign on with you to take the federal FAA drone pilot license. So what was that like?
Well, I decided that I needed to become a pilot and take the Part 107 FAA test. So I studied through with an online course and then a lot of other stuff as well. And then actually passed my test. The hardest part for me is deciphering these things called sectional charts, which are these maps, which are kind of like nautical maps, but they're meant for airspace and for air navigation. And they tell you things you'll see on the ground from an airplane, airports, airspace, mountains, obstacles, and they were designed, I guess, pre-digital. I'm pretty sure pre-digital, they're very and they're incredibly dense with information, and I still find them very hard to decipher all the information which they have in them. I think most pilots today use all kinds of electronic navigation devices to configure where they are, and it is a major requirement on the FAA Part 107 test. And I had to recently, after 2 years after passing the test, you've got to take another test to basically keep your license in good standing. And I did that again, and it continues to be difficult for me, these sectional charts. But I mean, at the same time, you know, it's a good challenge.
You showed me the sectional charts of New York City, and it looked like you took a highway map, a topo map, and then some sort of aircraft map with a whole bunch of other stuff on it with numbers and circles and straight lines. And I love maps, and I had a hard time deciphering it. But basically, it's showing you airspace and what you can do in that particular airspace related to other airplanes and what kind of airplanes can fly in what parts of that airspace?
In many ways, it's a three-dimensional map. Map is a flat piece of paper, but it needs to show the realities of all the elevation, both mountains, obstacles, buildings, and other kinds of things on the ground that rise up, as well as airspace. And what airspace you're allowed to fly in, depending on what class of airport there is, which and then airports have they call it an upside down wedding cake, in terms of the bottom is where the plane lands, and then it gets wider and wider as you go farther out, because planes of course have to fly in to land, and so you have to understand this and be able to decipher essentially as a drone pilot where you can legally fly, and then where you need to ask permission from who to get permission to fly. And there's ways of asking permission immediately on the spot, and then in some airspaces you have to ask online through an FAA portal. In New York City, there's another law which dates back to 1948, which is called Section 1028 Avigation. and it was it's a law that was made obviously pre-drone, and it basically forbids pilots from taking off or landing in New York City, with the exception of airports, heliports, and such. So that law exists, and in theory it covers the whole city of New York. But when you look at sectional charts, or like most people do, look at different apps that will show you where you can fly in New York City, you'll see that there are large sections of the city that you can fly in. But then you have this law to sort of consider as well. And then, of course, there's laws that you can't really fly over people. So it's quite a kind of a gray area in New York City. And I do fly in New York City, and I do even fly in Manhattan in very controlled, limited circumstances.
Right. But what you've done, I think, is amazing. So, I mean, it's not only for a television news program or for like a TV or movie thing. You're also doing it for real estate. And didn't you have to, like, some structural engineering company hired you to survey a building?
I had a couple interesting jobs recently had a lot of fun with. One of them is a architectural rendering company that out of London called, should I mention the names or doesn't matter?
It doesn't matter. It's a neat story more than anything.
Sure. It's an architectural rendering company called V1. And they needed 360 photographs of different elevations off of the top of a building. And they also need perspectives from across the street, but from high up, sort of where looking at the building from across the street. But unfortunately, the perspective you would need is actually where the building was.
Yeah.
So I could give them reference pictures, but not exactly what they need. But I learned how to use an app. What is that app called?
Oh, what's it called? I use it.
Right. Thank you.
I'll list it in the show notes, but it's a pretty amazing, third party app to control your DJI drone.
Yeah. And I hadn't used it basically because I didn't need to use it before, but it turned out to be really, really effective in 360 photographs. And I did like experiment after experiment using the Inspire 2, which is a larger drone that I own. It doesn't have 360 capability within the DJI app. So Lychee is what it's called.
Yes.
So I use the Lychee app, which will operate with the Inspire 2 to get 360 pictures, and then use it. And then working with a photographer friend of mine who does architectural photography, he did all the back end stitching, and we did test after test after test, figuring out what would work the best, which lens to work with. And basically, from the top of a building, they needed two different elevations because that's where they're going to build on top of this building. And they wanted to be able to make renderings of what the views out the windows will be once it's built at different times of day, depending on the light. So it was a lot to learn for me. And they turned out to be happy with the result. And I've seen some of the renderings and they look pretty neat. And that was, you know, in downtown Manhattan in Tribeca. And so because I can fly from someone's roof and because it was outside of any controlled airspace, in Midtown Manhattan, while Trump was president, you couldn't fly within quite a few miles of Trump Tower because for security purposes. And that was just something that you simply, no flight zone. Yeah. And, but now that's no longer in effect. Anyway, so that was a really fun challenge to take on. And then a few weeks ago, I was hired by another company, which is like a national, they do all kinds of drone related work. And they hired me to do a construction survey, which basically means there's a big construction site in New Jersey, in Elizabeth, New Jersey. And I flew the drone over, took a series of photographs of the state of a construction site, and then this sort of 360 video of the site as well. And I think every 3 months they're going to want an update. And this is for the architects and the developers to look at this material to see what the status is and that everything is as it should be in terms of the development of their project.
You showed me that rendering that you did of that building in Tribeca, and that it looked amazing. I mean, it basically looked like across the street from this building, there wasn't another building, and you just kind of stood on a ladder and took a photo.
I know, but this is like the amazing work that people can do with Photoshop, and that the renderers at V1 were able to do. Basically, there are these lenses that are for architecture that change the perspective, that can make, you know, instead of lines being like in a perspective curve, it can straighten them out. And they were able to do that with pictures that I was able to take. I mean, it's hard for me to look at the pictures that I gave them and to see what they were able to create and to sort of make sense of that. But I'm not a Photoshop person. I wish I was, but
that's a hard program.
Well, it's just deep, you know, it depends how deep you need to go into it.
Everyone, for the after show for the Garden Fork patrons, Brian and I are going to reveal our deepest thoughts about each other. So if you're a patron, stick around for that.
Okay, I'm scared.
So before we end the show, if I get these, they're kind of spammy emails all the time, and I see this stuff on Amazon or online of, I have a DJI drone, but there are these third-party brand drones that look very enticing and are so much less expensive. Do you know anything about those? Is that worth a couple bucks, or should they stick with the name brand if someone wants to buy one?
Yeah, I mean, I've also gotten some of these emails, and you know, for $100, you can buy a version of a Mavic, DJI Mavic,
a clone, basically.
Yeah, and I wouldn't want to try to do it professionally, and certainly if anything goes wrong with the drone, it's not a huge financial loss. But you have to consider also, like, these are flying these are flying lawnmowers, and you know, if you've ever seen what like a finger that gets into one of these propellers, you know what it can do, it's not something you want to see. So you know, I would be hesitant to mess with something that isn't tried and true, that doesn't have any kind of you'd have to do a lot of testing. I certainly wouldn't fly something like that in the city. But I mean, I have to say, there are other companies that are making amazing drones that I haven't had the pleasure to test. Outside of DJI, other there's a company called Autel Robotic, which is making some pretty cool drones that I've read about. And I'm really interested in getting into thermal video as well with drones.
Oh, we're going to talk about that.
Oh, yeah. It's really thermal and mapping. And this is not something I've done, but I've been reading up on it and investigating it. And unfortunately, all the drones I have are really specific for photography, but I'd have to buy all different drones, as far as I can tell. It's really interesting because emergency services are using drones for at locations with fires, to be able to see if there are people in the fire, in buildings when there's a fire, or to see where the fire is coming from. Also for search and rescue. And this is using thermal video, as well as for inspection purposes, like to see if a building is tight in terms of insulation. So there's all kinds of interesting things that are being used, as well as solar inspection. Thermal video equipped drones are being used for, which is something I'm really interested in as well to get into.
Check my solar panels on my roof.
I know. I can check yours, but I think they're primarily good for massive fields of solar panels, and they basically fly these drones over them, and they're able to tell like what panels have what issues. And usually these cameras on these drones have a thermal camera and a regular video camera that are both running at the same time, so you have a reference. And I'm certainly not the professional that can explain that much about this, but it's a really interesting field and certainly has a future.
I am kind of been doing a deep dive with a friend of mine who's an engineer, so he has that kind of brain, into LiDAR mapping.
Oof.
And
that's really neat stuff.
And Brian, I don't know if you've told me this, but there are old wagon wheel trails around my house upstate that we found with the LiDAR mapping. Did I show you those?
You mentioned it, but how did you get a LiDAR image from the ground?
No, or, they do it with, well, but my question, they do it from airplanes.
Right.
And the state of Connecticut, Matt, I don't know, it's the federal or state agency did publishes a LiDAR map that you can look at online. It has a whole viewer. But I'm wondering if with a drone, you could do small scale, you know, 100 acres or 10 acres LiDAR map that would be like super duper high resolution, you know, to the point that you could find, well, you can see stone walls in the state LiDAR map. But, you know, if you were looking for a particular outcropping, I just was curious if you had any experience with that.
I'm pretty sure, you know, there's some drones that you can put different cameras on, and there are definitely cameras with that are LiDAR equipped that you can attach to these drones. I don't know that much about that. I had the experience of being in a German military airplane over in the Arctic that was doing a LiDAR mapping mission of the permafrost. And basically I was shooting a scene for this documentary. And it was really interesting watching. And then I actually did an interview asking them in English, and they would respond to me in German, which I don't understand. They were able to fly from pretty high up and using their LiDAR penetrate in the permafrost, and they were creating a map, which they were then, they could somehow tell, the state of the permafrost, and then doing this over and over, they'd be able to see the changes of the permafrost, because there's huge concerns that permafrost that has remained frozen for hundreds of thousands of years is melting significantly. And this is one way to study this.
Yes, thanks to the climate crisis.
No, it was really neat.
Oh, no, it's fascinating, but it's basically because we keep putting warm stuff in the air. No, but that is neat. If anyone else has experience with LiDAR, I'd love to hear from you. It's radio@gardenfork.tv. It's very cool. So, all right, so we should wrap up here. Brian and I are going to stick around for a little after show chat about our personal feelings. And, but if you want to find Brian, I'll put his contact info in the show notes here. Your website is Fig Pie Media, correct?
Yes.
So like figs, like the fruit, fig pie, and then pie like you eat, and then media, figpiemedia.com. You can find Brian there. Some great videos and photos of the work he's done there. It's pretty cool. So, all right, go out and make do. Oh, I just screwed up the end of the show. But anyway, thanks for listening. We'll see you next week.
Thank you.
Garden Fork Radio is produced by Garden Fork Media LLC in Brooklyn, New York. Our producer is Sean O'Neill. If you need an amazing podcast producer, visit Sean's site, seaninbrooklyn.com. That's Sean, S-E-A-N, in Brooklyn.com. Our executive producer is Jimmy Goots. For more information about Jimmy and the custom hollow books he makes, visit hollowbooks.com. The music in the show is licensed from audioblocks.com and uniquetracks.com.